ॐ नमः श्रीयतिराजाय विवेकानन्दसूरये सच्चित्सुखस्वरूपाय स्वामिने तापहारिणे.
We are discussing the Jnana Yoga of Swami Vivekananda, and in that the most important part is what is Maya. According to Vedanta, Maya is the very foundation of the entire Vedanta, especially Advaita Vedanta. And why is it so? Because according to Vedanta, this whole world is temporary, changing, and full of misery. How do we know it is full of misery? Because if it is not miserable, you would never have attended my class. As we discussed before, this concept of Maya is the most misunderstood concept in the whole world. So many people, they misinterpret and say that this world doesn't exist. That is the first greatest mistake people do. The world doesn't exist. Second, even if they accept this world, somehow it has to be destroyed. Now there is a law of existence. You cannot destroy, you cannot create anything. Then what is this Maya? Swami Vivekananda has been explaining. What is the concept of Maya? It is not an delusion, it is not an illusion, but it is the fact that we experience. I am speaking and you are listening. This is part of the Maya. We discussed. We don't know where we start. We don't know where we end. So that is the concept we are discussing in our last class. If you recall, Swami Vivekananda told the story of Lord Buddha. From the birth, he was struggling to bring out something. He did not know what it was. All that he knew was there is something inside and he doesn't know exactly what it is and he wants to find it out. That fact that we feel there is something inside and we are struggling to express it, we don't know what it is, we don't know where it is, we don't know where it is taking us, we don't know how to reach, that concept is called Maya. So in the Lalita Vistara, that is how we ended our last class. One day Buddha was sitting under a tree, struggling with this. What is it that is carrying me? Why is it carrying me? How is it carrying me? And where is it carrying me? This beautiful concept has been put in a poetical form by Girish Chandra Ghosh in his beautiful drama called Buddha. And the essence, judai te chai, kothai judai, kotha hote ashi, kotha bhishe jai. Where from have I come? Who brought me here? Where am I going? And why am I going? Function of Maya is to make us utterly miserable. This is the answer to most of the theological or theistic religions. Why did the compassionate God create evil? Very briefly, the answer is, from the viewpoint of God, there is no evil. You know how it is? You are watching a movie. And imagine, it is one of the most violent movies in the world. You paid money to go and watch it. And do you enjoy it? Yes, immensely. But are you affected by it? Aesthetically, yes. This is called rasasvadana. You know, there is something called aesthetic enjoyment. I'll give you a small illustration. Suppose a great painter had painted a very old man, utterly miserable. And it is so wonderful, so realistic, that it evokes in us that sympathy. Ah, what a miserable life. Because the painter has succeeded in painting, but at the same time say, what a beautiful picture it is. You are saying it is miserable, you are saying it is beautiful, because it evokes a tremendous amount of compassion, pity, sympathy, empathy within the viewers. But at the same time, you are tremendously enjoying it. Why do you enjoy when the picture is so miserable? The secret is, on one side, emotional side, you feel that it is a terribly miserable life. At the same time, aesthetically, you feel how wonderfully this has been depicted, brought out. First of all, you respond to the reality of the picture. Secondly, you respond to the feeling that that picture evokes. Thirdly, you are 100% aware this is not life, but this is a picture. This is called aesthetic enjoyment. For God, this is an aesthetic enjoyment. There is a beautiful word in Sanskrit. It is called Leela. What is Leela? Leela doesn't mean, you know, there is so much of mistaken notions among Hindus about this word Leela. Always we remember Leela means Bhagavan Krishna on a autumnal full moonlit night playing with beautiful young gopis, dancing and singing. That is called Rasa Leela. Leela. That's not the concept of Leela. Leela means there could be happiness, there could be misery, there could be life, there could be death, there could be anything. Everything goes. Then why do we call it Leela? We call it Leela because it appears to be real, but not really real. You get the point? That is what is Maya. At one stage, we don't feel that life is Maya. We feel life is real. At another stage, we feel it is Maya, terrible. We want to do something, we can't do. We want to feel something, and we can't feel. We want to get out, we can't get out. But at some other stage, we feel it is nothing but Leela. Like watching a wonderful movie. If you get this idea, for a person who started life at the beginning stage, it is a reality, and he doesn't even think about it. After a lot of experience, that person feels it is terrible. Is there any way out? But for a person who is enlightened, it is complete Leela. Coming back to our subject, Bhagavan Buddha, he heard some angels sing this beautiful song. Where from do I come? That means, where do I go? If you don't know where from you are coming, you will also not know where you are going to go. And even if you know, how are you going to go? It is all comprised within the Maya. That was the subject we discussed in our last class. How wonderfully Swamiji is depicting this beautiful thing, we have to appreciate it. Thus we find that Maya is not a theory for the explanation of the world. It is simply a statement of facts as they exist. I am sitting here, you are sitting there, it is a statement of fact. Interestingly, I am sitting and talking, you are also listening. Do you all perceive my talk exactly alike? Each one of you have your own special individual reception. And sometimes there is the tape goes totally blank also. Swamiji is defining. Thus we find that Maya is not a theory for the explanation of the world. It is simply a statement of facts as they exist. That the very basis of our being is a contradiction. That everywhere we have to move through this tremendous contradiction. That wherever there is good, there must also be evil. And wherever there is evil, there must be some good. Wherever there is life, death must follow as its shadow. And everyone who smiles will have to weep. And vice versa. Nor can the state of things be remedied. Is there any remedy? Within Maya, there is no remedy. Outside Maya, there is no problem. What a wonderful thing it is. So long as you are dreaming, it's a big problem sometimes. But the moment you come out of dream, do you seek a solution? You don't. Why? Because there is no problem at all. The whole psychiatry is nothing but trying to cure an evil that doesn't exist. It is so wonderful, you know, a normal human being goes, I have to tell you some nice story, you know. There was a man and somehow he was convinced that he was a worm. So he was taken to a psychiatrist. Psychiatrist treated him for 3 years and convinced him that you are not a worm, you are a man. So last session, the patient thanked the doctor, of course paid his fee also, and he was going out. As he stepped outside the surgery, psychiatrist's office, he saw a chicken crossing from the other side of the road towards him. Immediately he ran back, jumped on the psychiatrist and said, look, look, doctor, that chicken is coming to swallow me up. Doctor said, man, didn't I convince you that you are not a worm, but you are a man? He said, doctor, I know that you know that, but the chicken doesn't know that. The point is, we are all mentally mad. But we don't use that word madness for two reasons. One is, everybody is mad. There is not enough space in the lunatic asylums. The second reason is, among these madcaps, there are worse madcaps. No, we label ourselves as normal people. And we label them as abnormal people. And try to take them to the hospitals or psychiatrists, psychologists, and try to get them cured. But there was a great psychiatrist called Jung, and he made a tremendous statement. He said, whom we label as abnormal, many of them are supernormal. Because they do not behave as we behave, we label them as abnormal. Normal and abnormal. What is the meaning of normal? If there is a village consisting of 100 people, 99 people are walking one way and one person is walking in the opposite direction. All the 99 people club together and they say, we are normal people, that person is abnormal. Did not people call Sri Ramakrishna as mad? In fact, they petitioned the owner of the Dakshineswar temple. He is not fit for worshipping the Divine Mother. He should be removed. If he is not removed, what happens? They said, everything will be destroyed. All of us are mad people. What does that mean? It means a person who doesn't know who he is madcap. Do I know who I am? Do you know who you are? I think I am a human being. You think you are also human beings. Is that our real identity? Our Upanishads, our Vedanta, it tells us, you are not a man, you are not a woman, you are not the body, you are not the mind, but you are Brahman. Umpty number of times this scripture is not tired to repeat it again and again, and yet even little bit of faith in that does not enter into our brain. What is the reason? That is Maya. That is what Swamiji is telling. It is not a theory for the explanation, but it is simply a statement of facts as they exist. But the most curious thing about it is, who can say we are within Maya? Only a person who is outside Maya can tell that we are within Maya. Who can tell this man is a madcap? A person who is not mad, only he can tell. But we are thinking, all the great people are mad, all spiritual people are mad, we are absolutely normal people. But there is something to be said. How do we really recognize, here is a saint? There are certain characteristics of a saint by which we know he is a saint. The first thing is, a saint is a person who is supremely happy without possessing almost nothing. Judge it. Supremely happy. We also can be happy at some moments. But a saint will be happy all the time. That is the first characteristic. Second characteristic, a saint doesn't know what fear is. He doesn't fear disease. He doesn't fear anybody. No enemies are there. And least of all, he doesn't fear death. In fact, his joys, you know, the story of Socrates, he was sentenced to death by hemlock. And then he was graphically describing how the poison was creeping from the foot of his leg slowly towards the heart, joyously. Then his disciples, who knew his greatness, they started weeping because, you know, physical separation. Then he said, you know, I know for sure that a far superior world is waiting for me. And so I am joyously looking forward to go there. When Swami Vivekananda passed away on 4th July 1902, next morning, he passed away at 6 o'clock. Next morning, Swami Ramakrishnananda, he was meditating at Madras and suddenly he heard voice, Shashi, Shashi, that was his pre-monastic name. I spat out the body. Oh my God, how much we, as though our life is going out, we try to, you know, cling to life like that, I remember. There was a patient and the doctor declared that you have only 5 minutes to live. So do you have any last wish? The patient could not even speak properly. He gathered all his energy and said, doctor, if you don't mind, can I have a second opinion? This is called intense clinging to life, abhinivesha. Whereas a saint, he is ever ready. If anybody says you have to die, he jumps in joy and dances. Why? Because he knows that this body, this mind is a terrible pain, terrible limitation. For them, what is pain? Limitation is a pain. This is a beautiful concept. We our whole life, we only struggle with two concepts. One is called pain and another is called pleasure. If you come to think about it, what is pain? Limitation. What is more pain? More limitation. What is terrible pain? Severe limitation. Whereas, what is pleasure? Freedom. Freedom from what? Time, space and causation. So, Maya is what we are. The great service Swami Vivekananda had rendered to humanity is that previous to Sri Ramakrishna and Swamiji, when I use the word Swami Vivekananda, we must always remember it means Sri Ramakrishna. Previous to Ramakrishna, Maya is depicted to Hindus by Hindus, the most terrible thing in the world. Somehow destroyed, somehow get out of it. But since Swami Vivekananda came, he gave the concept, no, Maya is your greatest friend. What is it trying to tell you? It is taking you through all these pains and pleasures to tell you, my child, you don't need to be here. Your home is elsewhere. We remember when Sri Ramakrishna first saw Swami Vivekananda at Calcutta, he sang two songs. One of the songs is, Mano Chalo Nija Niketane. Oh mind, let us go back to our own home. Our journey ends in going, in reaching our home. What is our home? Only God. But we do not know. Unconsciously we are traveling. Swami Vivekananda had given a most marvelous definition of what is life. He said, life is the unfoldment of a being under circumstances trying to press it down. In another definition he gave, life is a journey not from untruth to truth, but from a lower truth to a higher truth. What it means is life is a journey from a lower happiness to a higher happiness. But this journey has an end. What is the end? When we reach God. That means instead of having happiness, we become happiness. Instead of seeking ananda, we become ananda swarupa. Then our quest comes to an end. And who is going to help us? Maya. Maya is going to help us. What is Maya? Wherever there is good, there must also be evil. And wherever there is evil, there must be some good. Wherever there is life, death must follow as its shadow. And everyone who smiles will have to weep, and vice versa. Nor can this state of things be remedied. You cannot remedy. You should not remedy. Then what should you do? You just surrender to Maya. Pray to Maya. When you pray to Maya, it doesn't become Maya. You know what it becomes? Mahamaya, a divine mother. Thus, the Vedanta philosophy is neither optimistic nor pessimistic. It voices both these views, but takes things as they are. It admits that this world is a mixture of good and evil, happiness and misery, and that to increase the one, one must of necessity increase the other. Here is a boldest statement of Vedanta through the words. If you try to increase your pleasure, you will also necessarily to increase your pain. Most of us seem not to understand this tremendous statement. Interestingly, Swamiji gives such a beautiful analysis. How do we do it? Do we really increase the happiness or do we increase our capacity to extract happiness? Swamiji gives a beautiful illustration, example. So supposing, you know, there is a dog. Where is all its life? In its senses. So if you give some food, it enjoys food tremendously. Is there any human being who can enjoy food like a dog or like a wolf? It's impossible. But by the same token, if you give pain to an animal, to the same animal, it will suffer 100-fold more. You know why? Because that capacity to enjoy also is the capacity to suffer. Without understanding that, we are thinking that we can increase the amount of happiness and at the same time, we can decrease the unhappiness. Try to cut a coin so that you can remove one side of it. Try. You know, you won't find a coin which has only one side. And when you get a coin which has one side, you won't be in this world. Take your choice what you want to do. There never can be a perfectly good or bad world. Because the very idea is a contradiction in terms. The great secret revealed by this analysis is that good and bad
are not two cut and dried separate existences. They are one but experienced differently under different circumstances. Ramana Maharshi used to give a beautiful illustration. I liked it so much. In a village, there were two women and both of them have the same names, exactly same name. And both of them were married at the same time. And both of them gave birth to one son each at the same time. And both of them became fast friends. They grew up, they went to the same school, they completed their education. Both of them have joined the military and they were sent to the battlefront. The names of both the boys were also exactly the same. What happened? One of them was killed in the battle and the military had to inform the parents. So they sent a telegram to this village that this boy is dead, we are sorry. The postman brought. What did he do? Because the name is same, he delivered that telegram to the wrong woman. Now, naturally, she burst into terrible amount of agony. Her only son had died. Now the neighbor, her closest friend by the same name, she came and started consoling. Now just look at the irony of it. The woman who is supposed to grieve is supremely happy. It is not my son who is dead. And the woman who is supposed to be rejoicing, she is so much grief stricken. All because of what? It is the same message. Your son is dead. To one person, it's my son is dead. To the other person, my son is alive. Actually, it is a mistaken notion. The point is, the same situation can create either happiness or unhappiness in the same person, depending upon the circumstances. Now, this was the story Ramana Maharshi gave as an illustration. Now, I extend it a little bit. After some time, that woman comes to know that this is not my son who is dead, but it is the other woman's son. Now the roles are reversed. The woman who was so much grief-stricken, now she will be the so happy, not only consolation, as much as she was suffering, now she will enjoy that much. Now a little mathematics. Supposing that woman's grief before she got the real news is 70%. What will be her happiness after reaching the real news? 70%. Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful illustration again. How wonderful it is, you know. There was a farmer in a village and he had only one son. And one day when this man was working in the fields, he got the news. Somebody came running and informed that his only son was dead. Immediately he returned home. And his wife was weeping her eyes out. Then this man looked at this, no reaction at all. The wife got so angry and said, are you so hard-hearted? Don't you have any love for your own son? Not even one single tear is coming out of your eyes. Then the farmer was a gnani, man of knowledge. He said, look here, my dear. Yesterday night I had a dream. I was a king. I had 7 lovely sons. As soon as I woke up, my kingdom is gone. My kingship is gone. My 7 beautiful sons are gone. Now I am left with what? A monkey faced. He did not say that. It's my addition in brackets. Now for whom shall I weep? Shall I weep for those 7 sons of mine? Because when the man was dreaming, was it a dream or was it reality? Was it 100% reality? Is it not? When we are dreaming something, do you feel that that is a dream? No, it is 100% reality. But as soon as we wake up, then that becomes 100% what? 1% unreality? Does it become 5% unreality? It becomes 100% unreality. And how do we know? This what we call the present waking state is also not exactly like that. In fact, it is like that. Only we are not wise enough to recognize it. Let me tell you, yesterday you had your life, is it not? Is it a reality now or is it only a dream? Tell me, what happened yesterday? Not only yesterday, what happened 1 minute back, 1 second back is gone forever. You cannot take it, get it back. You can only have memory of it. Is it not a fact? Our body is changing, our mind is changing, time is changing everything. And yet what can you do? Nothing. Is it nothing? No, you can do something about it. If you really look at it, whatever is changing is a dream. and whatever doesn't change is reality. That is the definition of reality according to Vedanta. Trikala abadhitam satyam. Truth is that which never changes. If we analyze like that, what is it that never changes? Only one. I, the witness. I know I was a child. I know I was a young person. I know I am an old person. I know everything. I am witnessing. I have two eyes. One eye is changing with every, identifying with every change that is taking place. The other eye only witnesses. That integrates our past, our present, including our plans for the future. That witnessing eye never changes. Because if it changes, it is not witnessing eye. Can we place more emphasis upon that unchanging eye? That is called spiritual practice. Swami Vivekananda continues, the great secret revealed by this analysis is that good and bad are not two cut and dried separate existences. Is there any way to stop evil? He says, yes, you can stop. The only way to stop evil, therefore, is to stop good also. There is no other way. Then he proceeds, to stop death, we shall have to stop life also. What is spiritual life? Not to live a long time. It is to go beyond both life and death. I would like to take a minute in this connection, you know. What is the definition of life? We are terribly frightened, not of life, but of death. But of course, life also, every minute we are dying. When you are not happy, are you living or are you dead? You are living dead. Because you are experiencing misery. You wish you were dead, even though you are not dead. But you will not die because you are hoping after some time, life will be more pleasant. This illusion or delusion that at some future point, I will be having this body mind and I will be very happy. This is called swarga, heaven. And this is the cruelest notion anybody can cherish, anybody can entertain. Because even heaven, there is an end. If you fall from heaven, how unpleasant it would be. It is terrible. What is the way out? You go beyond both happiness and unhappiness, beyond life and death, beyond good and evil, and that is called spiritual life. Naturally, the question arises, what type of life is that which is beyond these dualities, contradictions? And that is called the nature of Atman. And that Atman has no body. Have you noticed? If there is no body, then there is no suffering, bodily suffering. Example, if you take a small pin and prick anybody, it will be terribly painful, isn't it? But supposing somebody had to take one saw and then saw your legs, amputate your hands, etc. How terrible it is, is it not? But suppose you go to a hospital, the surgeon, he will give you anesthesia and he starts cutting. What do you feel? Do you feel anything? What is the point? As though, even though you are consciously watching, as though that is not your body. They are cutting as though somebody else's body. Is it not? This is called identifying with Atman. Go beyond the body, all bodily, both joys and sorrows will be transcended. But there is mind. Actually, there is a very interesting point here. When a pin is pricked, who suffers, body or mind? It's not the body. The poor body doesn't know anything. My favorite illustration, you know, always it comes to my mind. So there was a village and there was a young man. He fell in love with a young woman. What is a village? A village is a place where everybody knows everybody else's affair. And what is a city? Nobody knows about anybody. That is called a city. So this young man and young woman, they can't do anything in their homes. Because everybody will know about it. So they made an appointment with each other at 10 o'clock at night. We will meet outside the village under a big banyan tree. It was a little bit dark when this young man reached there and found that young woman is already waiting for him. He could not help himself. He went, rushed forward and embraced her deeply and enjoying Brahmananda. After a few seconds, he started feeling the prickly sensation. By the time the moon came out, and then he found that was a black bear, which he mistook that was his beloved that has come. Now, my question to you is, when he was embracing the bear, was he happy or unhappy? Yeah, like Kicheka goes and embraces Bhima. You see, this is the most amusing incident in the whole Mahabharata. This Draupadi is 5 foot and 2 inches, lean and thin. This Bhimasena is more than 7 feet. But this Kichika, you know, blind. That's why they say love is blind. He went forward and then embraced. You know this Mahabharata story, you have seen that one. Afterwards, what happens to Kichika? That also you know. What is my point? When he was embracing Bhimasena, was he deriving the joy of embracing Draupadi or not? What is my point? Don't forget what is the point. Whether it is happiness or unhappiness is felt by what? Not by the body. It is felt by the mind. If we can somehow keep ourselves witnessing the mind, then you can enjoy both happiness and unhappiness. That is our goal. That is our spiritual goal. Swami Vivekananda is giving a very wise statement that the way to stop death, we shall have to stop life. In that connection, I was trying to tell you, what is the definition of life? Life is not something suddenly comes into existence. Death is not that something which goes out of existence. I will give an illustration. I have given you this illustration so many times. Here is a piece of wood. What do you see? A lump of wood. Then a carpenter comes and makes a table out of it. Now what has that wood become? Table. What do we call it? The table is born. So has it come from the sky or is it only changing the shape of the wood? After some time, break this table. Now we say the table is dead. Is it dead now? Merely it has changed its shape. Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidhananyeva tatra ka paridevana. Bhagavad Gita, second chapter, it says, O Arjuna, you are grieving for this body's birth or death. But what is birth? That which was in an unmanifested form has become manifested. What is death? That which is manifested has gone back merely into the unmanifested. What do we mean by that unmanifested? Beyond our ken? No. What it means is the nama and rupa, name and form, have been changed. That is all it takes place. There is no real birth, there is no real death. Manifestation and non-manifestation. This is going on all the time in our life. So now the Vedanta says there must come a time when we shall look back and laugh at the ideals which make us afraid of giving up our individuality. Our whole individuality is, I am this and I am not anything else. The moment we say, I am this, what do I mean? I mean this body and mind. What does that mean? All the joys or sorrows in the world, they only pertain to the body and mind and to nothing else. But to go beyond this birth and death question, we have to melt our individuality. How is it possible? Sri Ramakrishna gives a beautiful illustration. Supposing there are 10 pots full of water and these pots are of different shapes, different colors, different sizes. And you know children, how they mistake these things. If you ask a child, which water do you want? I want that particular water which is in that particular pot. So you give him, he's very happy. Don't give him, is very unhappy. Now, to continue the illustration, you bring a big pot and empty this water into that big pot and destroy all the pots. Has any change come in the water? The change is only in the pot. But I will give a more realistic illustration. You know, Diwali time, which is going to come soon, Diwali time, at least in South India, we make different sweets out of sugar. Then sugar, you know, there is wooden molds are there. It comes like the beak of a crow, beak of a parrot, and then a small chariot, and horse's head, etc., different heads. And then different colors also. And you make it, keep it there, and ask 5-6 children, now you choose what you want. And you know what they do? I want only parrot. The other fellow says, I want horse head. The other fellow says, I want a conch. The children, they have preferences. And if they don't get horse head, if they get chariot, they are very unhappy. But an adult knows, the moment that sweet goes into the mouth, what does it become? Only sugar. Nothing but sugar. So that is called wisdom. Birth and death is nothing but different forms, different shapes, different sizes, different names. Nama and Rupa. This world will be always like that. What is the way out? That one day we must give up our individuality. The whole problem comes because of individuality. If I am this, I like somebody, I dislike somebody. Tell me, very interesting question. When we say, I like somebody, are you judging that person's qualities or are you judging that person's outside appearance, physical personality? What do you say? Simple example. These are very interesting concepts. Suppose there is a young man of 20 years and there are two ladies. One is 20 years, one is 80 years. Whom does he prefer? Naturally, say only 20 years old. What is he judging that lady by? Only by the appearance of the body, is it not? What is the big deal of difference? I can make a little bit of fun, you know. Suppose both these women are walking in a wooded area and a tiger sees them. Now, how does that judge these two women? Let me add a little bit of masala, spice. So, this old woman is a little bit taller and plumpy. And the young girl is, what is that, anorexic. Which one the tiger will prefer now? Whenever we young people meet, we are first judging the person by the physical appearance. And that can lead to terrible tragedies later on. Most of the marriages are failing, that's why. Very interesting concept. Whereas, when Indians, usually in the past, even now in many places, when they arrange marriages, do you know what they look at? Not at the physical appearance of a person, but at in which house that bride or bridegroom is buried. We call it Gana, Rakshasa Gana, Deva Gana. Now, what is the idea? What is Rakshasa Gana? Person's quality is supposed to be represented. This person has got better qualities, more good qualities than this person. If a person his goodness is more, then that marriage is naturally, it has a chance to last longer. We are very short-sighted people. But the ultimate solution, the Maya, leads us to such a realization that in the end, we don't want any body, we don't want any mind, we want to go beyond both body and mind. That is the point. Swamiji puts this question, what then is the use of Vedanta and all other philosophies and religions? And above all, what is the use of doing good? Very crucial question. If everything is Maya, you can't increase goodness, you can't increase evilness, it will always be there whatever you do. If this is the philosophy you are preaching, then what is the point of my going and doing some good? Swamiji also answers, in the first place, that we must work for lessening misery, for that is the only way to make ourselves happy. Swamiji was a superb psychologist. He found out anybody who is trying to be happy selfishly, he is likely to suffer more. And anybody who is trying to increase other people's happiness, his happiness is likely to be much superior to the selfish person. Do we easily believe this statement of the scriptures? Because this is the scripture of the statement. I will just elaborate slightly because it is our whole belief in God comes from our belief from the scripture. How did you come to know there is a God? From the scripture. How did you come to know that there is going to be a future life? From the scripture. And the same scripture is telling something. Oh man, do you want to be happy? And which man says, I don't want to be happy? Everybody says, I want to be happy. If you want to be happy, then a particular term is used. Then acquire punya. Punya means merit through your actions. And how does one get punya? By sacrificing one's selfishness, by trying to do as much good as we can to the other people. Do we have faith in it? We are all trying. I will do a little bit of good. The law of karma is exact. If you give 1% donation or service to others, how much you will get? Only 1%. The scriptures are very clear about it. If you want real happiness, then you have to acquire merit. Merit comes when you sacrifice your individual selfishness and increase your unselfishness and serve other people. Now, you see the utility of it. We should not do it for this purpose. But the point is, even from the utilitarian point of view, if you want to be happy, what should you do? you serve people, you donate whatever you can. This is part of Hindu life. Just I want to mention it to you. According to Hindu Dharma Shastra, every householder's income is supposed to be divided into four parts. One part for his present expenses. Second part, to pay taxes to the government. And third part, to serve people who are in need. That includes his own parents, grandparents, etc. And fourth part, it is meant only to do this dana, dharma, etc. According to Muslims, every devout Muslim must pay how much? 1/10 of his or her income. They have to donate it to the mosque. Now, why did this rule come into being? Only for a simple reason. Because that is the wealth which goes with us to the other world. And through whom? Through God. This is the law of karma. That's why I gave a peculiar name to God. Interloka Insurance Company. So you pay here the premium. You know, okay, I donate so much. And God keeps an account. Wherever you go, whether you go to heaven or wherever, Chandraloka, Indraloka, Brahmaloka, that account will be there in your, and then you can convert. This is the advantage of, like a credit card. You pay your pounds here, you go to any country and it will be transformed into that particular currency. Not only currency, you can buy anything you want. You go to a shop, buy dress. You go to a hotel, pay for the food. Whatever you want, you can do the credit card. Punya and papa, merit and demerit, they belong to that category which can be transformed in any place we are into either happiness or unhappiness. And no human being consciously, willingly wants to suffer. Our whole effort in from birth to death is how to avoid dukkha, unhappiness, and how to gain sukha. Is it not? That's where it says, let the world be whatever it is. But it should be your endeavor to do as much good as possible. Swami Vivekananda says categorically, that is the only way to your happiness. The Vedanta says that it is true that the absolute or the infinite is trying to express itself in the finite. But there will come a time when it will find that it is impossible, that it will then have to beat a retreat. And this beating a retreat means renunciation, which is the real beginning of religion. Here is the beautiful point. Man, through countless number of births and deaths, goes through this rigmarole of Maya. Ultimately, Maya, through pain and pleasure, awakens the human being. And then it comes a time, there is no point in staying in the realm of Maya. That means he is awakened. And he says, I must go beyond Maya. This is the most important point we have to understand. Attribute it to Maya. What is the function of Maya? In simple statement, the function of Maya, the goal of Maya, the mission of Maya is to take us beyond Maya. I will just add one simple note. Is this a new idea of Swami Vivekananda? Not really. This is the very essence of one school of philosophy called Sankhya. We have to study a book that is called Sankhya Karika. And it is a beautiful way. Vedanta incorporates most of the ideas of Sankhya into our Advaita Vedanta. But the Sankhya Karika ends and said, this Prakruti, Prakruti means this world means this nature, this body, mind. Prakruti holds our hands, each person's hand, like a loving mother. It conducts the soul, Purusha, through happiness and unhappiness, birth after birth, always giving him new experience, and ultimately it will take to its ultimate border, utmost border, and says, my child, you do not belong to me, I do not belong to you, there is your home, now please go. And each soul, like a loving mother, it conducts and then hands it over to its real parent, who is God, and that is the function of Prakruti. And that Prakruti of the Sankhyas is now termed as, in Vedanta, is what? Maya. What is the function of Maya? Its function is only for our good. What is the good? To take us beyond Maya. And if you go beyond Maya, what remains? Only Brahman. So the function of Maya is to awaken us to bring us to the realization, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.